Good Friday. Today is March the 21st, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, it is maple syrup season around the Buckeye State. We're going to take some time as we look out in the backyard and garden, talk about maple syrup, the different trees they can come from, and what tapping looks like this time of year. We'll have all the details on that and more after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to start off this Friday morning as we take a look out in the backyard and garden, and we want to talk about maple syrup today as we are in the heart of maple syrup season. Typically, maple syrup season will run anywhere from mid-February to early April. It just really depends on the year and the weather. It depends on when we have the low temperatures in the 20s and high temperatures that are in the 40s and 50s, and that fluctuation is what helps the sap flow through the trees, which ultimately then is what becomes our syrup. Now, Ohio has a large production of maple syrup, actually. Approximately 100,000 gallons of maple syrup are produced each year by about 900 producers of all different scale within their operations. Northeast Ohio is sort of the maple syrup producing region of the state, although it is done right here in Northwest Ohio and in all parts of the state that have maple trees. Now, all different species of maple trees can be used to produce the syrup. As an example, with sugar maples, though, it takes about 43 gallons of sap to get boiled down to produce 1 gallon of maple syrup. So obviously there's a lot of water in that process and a lot of collection work that goes into it. The lower the sugar content of the sap, the more gallons of sap that you need to produce a gallon of syrup. And also the lower the sugar content, the more fuel and time it takes to boil that sap down. Today, a lot of commercial producers use technology that shortens the boil time. Some use a reverse osmosis machine that removes 75% of the sap's water content before they start that boiling. But a lot of folks that do it more as a hobby or in the old school way will just put those into boiling pans and boil them down. New tapping guidelines have been developed at the University of Vermont, interestingly enough, and they rate the number of taps it takes per tree based on the size or the diameter of that tree. So they say if it's a tree 10 to 12 inches in diameter, that would be a one tap tree. If it's greater than 24 inches, then you could put two taps in that tree. But the recommendation is no more than that because it can eventually become harmful to the tree if you pull away too much sap too quickly. Now, when it comes to tapping trees, that's typically done late winter or early spring. Some will tap by the calendar date. Others, though, do it based on when they see some of the weather changes, or they may do it by a certain date on the calendar, let's say President's Day. If we take a look, though, sap flow from a tap tree does not occur each and every day throughout the tapping season, but only when those conditions are favorable, and sap can be collected for syrup production typically until just before tree buds begin to expand. So usually, again, that's sometime late March, early April, depending on what the weather conditions are and where you're located in the state. Sap collected and processed into syrup after bud expansion begins often refers to what they call buddy syrup, which has a distinct, sometimes unpleasant flavor. Sometimes it's what they would call more of a bitter butterscotch flavor. So the time does quickly change. Some folks will collect the sap in different buckets. Others have small hoses and tubes that they put on a small vacuum system that will pull that as they collect it from the trees. Oftentimes the problem is with wildlife, those hoses and tubes can get snapped off or snagged and taken off, and then you lose syrup. The other problem, though, with buckets is that's a lot to collect and gather and be running back and forth. But nonetheless, for folks that enjoy making maple syrup, the last 2 weeks has been their busy season. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now and talk about getting your garden ready for the coming year. You know, prepping your home garden for spring includes factoring how your plants looked last year as a possible sign of issues of growing a specific plant in a specific spot. USDA's Rod Bain tells us more.
Getting the flower or vegetable garden ready for spring, perhaps a key in planning and planting, is looking back to last year. According to Elizabeth Domenghiti of Kansas State University Extension,
if last fall or last summer your plants were struggling, if you were seeing spots on the stems or the leaves or stunted growth, and it's something that's just irregular, something you weren't expecting to see, there's a reason for that.
And while she acknowledges a myriad of factors could be behind that,
could be not enough sunlight, the planting location may not have been ideal,
discolored leaves from last year's plants could be an indication of
nutrient deficiencies or even toxicities.
With suspected nutrition deficiencies or soil toxicities, Domenghini recommends testing your soil. As for potential pest or disease threats,
examine the soil, looking for egg cases, things like that, in the soil, on the underside of the leaves.
And while usually this kind of investigation is best in the fall, if you come across any of these signs in your garden at any time,
I would not recommend replanting that same species of plant in that same area the following spring.
You might be familiar with crop rotation when it comes to a farmer planting different species in different fields at different times. For your plant or vegetable garden,
rotating your crops is a good idea regardless of whether or not you saw signs of problems the previous year.
But what if rotation is not possible due to limitations like available space?
Maybe don't grow that crop for a couple of years. Give your soil a chance to rebound and then try it again in a couple of years.
Domenghini realizes these tips are generic in nature. For more specific information,
your local extension agency is a valuable resource. They can provide you with information about common pests for your area and things that gardeners have been seeing.
In addition,
working with your other local gardeners is a really good way to get some of that information of what you should be looking for in your garden as well.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.